You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent News, your trusted source for seafood prices, news, and data. I'm Amanda Buckle, and my co-host Lauren Castiglione is out today, conveniently scheduling some well-earned vacation time on the same week that U.S. President Donald Trump set the trade deadline for his Liberation Day tariffs. Lauren thought she could get away without talking about tariffs again, but the joke's on her, and I guess all of us really, because Trump has delayed the implementation of tariffs yet again. Tariff time was supposed to officially begin July 9th, according to the Trump administration. Yet on Monday, just days from the deadline, the president turned to his Truth Social platform to begin posting letters to countries declaring a new implementation date for tariffs, August 1st. 2025. So save that date, folks. There's no better person to sub in for Lauren on the podcast this week than Undercurrent News America's editor, Jason Huffman, who took one for the team and signed up for a Truth Social account. Welcome and thank you, Jason.
Hi. So I was thinking we really could use some theme music for this segment. I was thinking soap opera. Kind of like a how Trump's tariff world war turns, right?
Oh, we could do that, Jason. We could take care of that.
Yeah, okay. I'll count on you to get that done. I don't want your sympathy, Amanda, but do you know how glued I am now to that account, Truth Social? It's torture. I have to check it around the clock to see what tariff he has announced for a deal that he's announced. And you never know when it's going to come. It comes at the end of the day, it comes over the weekend. It just, you never know. And of course, you know, we're so dedicated as journalists at Undercurrent. We got to jump on it. So I'm gonna bring you up to speed real quick with what's been happening lately. And then we'll talk about something I'm working on. You recall that back on April 2nd, Trump announced the generalized 10% tariff for goods from nearly all nations. And then he said on July 9th, which was this past Wednesday, that much higher nation-specific tariffs were going into effect. Going to hit countries that we really count on for seafood, like Indonesia. It's going to have to pay 32%, Thailand 36%. And then this week he announced he was delaying those nation-specific tariffs until August 1st. We're never going to get off this cycle.
It's just going to keep going. No, maybe next month.
I think this is the rest of my life. I really do. I think every week we're going to be looking for something else.
I hope not, Jason.
That's a scary thought. So then on Wednesday, he declared he was hitting Brazil with a 50% tariff. It was at the end of the day, of course, and he gave some reasons. He doesn't like the way the current government is handling the prosecution of former President Jair Bolsonaro. That tariff goes into effect on August 1st, and it threatens to hit the U.S.'s largest supplier of coffee. Brazil sends us about a third of our beans, and its largest supplier of orange juice. Brazil sends us about half of our OJ. When it comes to seafood, Brazil is not a major player. It's the 19th most valuable source of seafood. They sent us 39,188 metric tons worth about $232 million in 2024. But among the items that are threatened are some things that people really love. Fresh tilapia. We took in 10,119 tons of it worth $51 million in 2024. Red snapper. We imported $42 million last year worth of that stuff. And warm water lobster. 827 tons worth $34 million in 2024. Brazil is one of a small handful of nations that we get warm water lobster tails from. So now everyone is living in this cloud of fear about what tariffs are coming next. And it's something that everybody's dreading, trying to figure out how to do contracts around. They've got deals with suppliers. What should they be lining up for? I did some research this week and I found out that the tariffs already are bad news for U.S. seafood companies.
And Jason, by doing research, you mean you fell down a rabbit hole this week.
Yes, pretty much my approach to all research. Look for the rabbit hole, jump in it. So I used NOAA's Seafood Trade Database, their latest update, and I was able to find that U.S. seafood importers spent about $158.9 million in tariffs on $2.6 billion worth of seafood in May alone. That's about 6% of the overall value of the goods. That blows away anything that we used to do. There was nothing like that before. And then, this started in April, and earlier I had measured April's tariffs at $85.4 million. So this was almost double what we saw in April. That's just from the 10% generalized tariff and some of the tariffs hitting China specifically. So this could get a lot worse. My research also involved determining which nations and which species were getting hit the hardest. Wasn't good news for Chilean salmon, and it wasn't good news for Ecuadorian shrimp, which are two items we know are huge in our world.
Trump was active as ever on Truth Social this week, in between posting tariff letters and demanding that Brazil stop its witch hunt against its former president, Bolsonaro. The US president also took to his social media platform to share a video featuring members of a sport fishing group in the US state of Virginia, alleging the menhaden stock in the Chesapeake Bay is being pillaged by foreigners. Joining me on the pod today to talk about the story is Undercurrent reporter Barb Dean Simmons. So, never a dull moment with Trump in office. Hey, Barb.
Understatement of the week, Amanda. So I guess his Truth Social post went up on a Saturday, July 5th, after your holiday. What's interesting about this is that, first of all, we have no idea of like who produced the video. It's a 4.5 minute clip. Obviously, it must have come from a longer clip, some sources tell us, but it is certainly I guess, meant to get Trump's attention and the sports fishing community in Virginia and Maryland and around the Chesapeake Bay, as well as some of the sports fishing folks in the Gulf of Mexico. I really laid out an argument that says that, Canadian companies are taking advantage of this fish, which is a forage fish for other species. And so after the video was posted by Trump on his social platform, the Virginia Sports Fishing Association followed that up with a letter to Trump asking him to basically, they want the president to sign an executive order and pull back on that industrial fishery. They say that the menhaden is important forage fish and that the foreigners, i.e., Canadians, and specifically Cook, are taking advantage of that fishery. Of course, Cook hasn't commented specifically on this because they say the company that harvests menhaden, Ocean Harvest, is US-based, US-run, and even though they are affiliated with Cook, it is a US-based operation and fishery. And of course, an official at Ocean Harvest says all of these things that are being alleged in the video have been debunked. It's not foreign owned and controlled. And the menhaden fishery, the stock itself, has been determined to be in pretty good health. And so there it sits. But yeah, just the fact that it was posted on Truth Social gets it some traction. And the sports fishing people, folks, have followed up that with a letter to Trump asking for an executive order to basically shut down the industrial menhaden fishery. They've also launched on their social media platform a Kick Canada Out of the Fishery campaign to, I guess, push that idea a little bit more. So there it sits. What Trump will do with that, who knows? I guess that might be the headline on another day.
Yeah, what's really interesting about it is that he shared the video and that was it. Like there was no commenting on it. Yeah, there was no mention of where it came from, what his thoughts were on it. He just shared this video.
And yeah, and that's what's interesting. There was no comment to offer context or any insight, just the video he shared. I mean, nobody knows for sure who produced it. So there's that whole question mark as well.
Just another day covering Trump in the seafood world. So, Barb, while I've got you, I can't miss the opportunity to talk about another big headline from this week, snow crab imports. And it seems like Canadians actually have Trump to thank for pushing quite a bit of snow crab into the US before those pesky tariffs hit.
Yep. Well, I guess thank Trump or the any US market that seems to want Canadian snow crab when and hasn't imposed tariffs. And you might also want to consider that, the tariffs that China imposed on Canadian seafood are pushing Canadians to the US for more sales. So basically, you might recall that the season in Canada started April 5th, and that was in the Gulf of St. Lawrence, and that's always the first Atlantic Canadian zone to start fishing. They had a smaller quota this year, around 16,000 tons. And sources there tell me that because of all of that uncertainty, I mean, you remember going back to March and April where Trump was saying maybe we'll charge tariffs on Canadian goods, and nobody really knew where seafood was going to sit with that. And so harvesters and processors in the Maritime provinces, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, they really pushed to get that crab landed, cooked, and shipped across the border as quickly as they could. And right now, because of that, there's little, if any, Gulf snow crab in cold storage in Canada. And they can also thank Red Lobster for that as well, because apparently Red Lobster put in a pretty big order to secure their supply of Canadian snow crab, and the Gulf processors and harvesters benefited from that. Undercurrent trade data shows that the U.S. has imported some 26,000 metric tons of snow crab worth $556 million to the end of May, and that is specifically related to the first 2 months of the Canadian snow crab season. That's 7% more volume and 45% more value than the first 2 months of the 2024 snow crab season. Of course, don't forget, there's lots more crab to come because harvesters and processors in Newfoundland and Labrador are trying to finish up the season in the world's largest snow crab fishery. Up to July 8th, Newfoundland harvesters had landed 54,000 tons, or about 87% of their tack. Right now, I just checked the numbers today, and they've got about 7,000 tons of crab to come out of the water by the end of the season, which is likely to end on July 30th. And sources tell me that there's still lots of that crab still in cold storage in Canada, because food service markets in the US are a little bit soft. And there's some speculation that some exporters might even hold on to some of that product for later in the year, hoping to, I guess, cash in on maybe a better market in the ahead of the Thanksgiving and Christmas holiday season. So yeah, Canadians have been managing to get lots of snow crab across the border at a pretty good price, but we've got a lot to throw your way. So we'll see what happens as the year ticks down.
Thanks, Barb. And Barb's story, we'll link back to it in our show notes. Definitely check it out because it's filled with charts and graphs. So again, access to Barb's story in the notes. Rounding out the lineup of Loin replacements on the podcast this week is reporter Jacob Rusnak calling in from Alaska, where he's been reporting on the Bristol Bay salmon season. One of the coolest things I think about this job is how often we get to travel and the cool places we go. So, Jacob, you are calling in from Alaska this week. Where in Alaska are you?
I'm in the city of Dillingham on the western side of Bristol Bay. It's kind of the commercials hub for this area. There are processors here, there's fleet here, and it's in the Nooshigak Fishing District, which has been really exceeding expectations with some really good wild salmon, wild sockeye production this year.
So, have you ever been up there during the salmon season?
Started my fish reporting career 15 years ago as the summer fish reporter for the local public radio station, KDLG, which I'm happy to report is still at it, giving the information to the fleet.
So, 15 years later, you're back there now.
Some has changed, some has not. There's been a lot of consolidation in the processing side. There's a lot fewer players, like companies that have been around for more than a century. I'm not exaggerating, like Peter Pan aren't here anymore. Ocean Beauty, Icicle, OBI. There are no longer players on Bristol Bay. Silver Bay Seafoods has stepped up through mergers and investments and plant acquisitions. There's been a lot of merger and acquisition activity. So really, you only have four major players, and that's Silver Bay, Canfisco, which owns like Leader Creek, Alaska General Seafoods, and E&E, several other brand names. Trident Seafoods, although they've kind of dialed back some of their salmon side of their business, they're still very much here. And then Northline Seafoods, which is a relatively new player with family that's been here a long time, but they have a floating salmon barge over in the Wood River, which I had a chance to check out, and they're doing something a little different than the other players.
Yeah, let's hit there because you're talking about the Hannah, of course. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's like this 400-foot barge that's not under its own power. It's towed by a tug. Basically, what it does is it has about a 10 million pound cold storage capacity. What happens is the tenders and even just the individual fishing vessels will come tie up to it, deliver the fresh caught sockeye, and it's not headed, gutted, it's not filleted, it's not even bled. It's just basically unloaded, put in these giant spiral freezers, and like 2 hours later, whole round frozen salmon, which are put in cold storage. Some of the excess is being put on a tramper that's going to go down for secondary processing in Canada. But the plan for the company is actually at the end of the season to sail back south to Bellingham, Washington, where the company is based, and do the processing there or offload for secondary processing. So their bet is catch the fish, freeze it while it's fresh, and have the capacity to hold on to it and maximize the sales when the market is best.
So, were you able to actually go onto the Hannah?
I was, yeah. I spent a couple hours on the Hannah. It's very modern, very impressive in a lot of ways, very automated, a lot less crew than I expected. There's about 90 personnel, about half of that are working on the production, overseeing the freezers and the salmon deliveries and things like that. And the other half are, administration and engineering. But, in the era of internet and having Starlink direct satellite access, some of the main technicians and engineers are actually working remotely and can monitor all the onboard systems. And if there's any kinks and problems, they're always told like 9 times out of 10 they can troubleshoot it from afar. So they don't
Wow.
actually have to have as many like technical engineers on board while they're in production mode.
That's amazing. It's so funny that you're talking about this and showing how technology has advanced and evolved. And then on the opposite side, you've written some really beautiful features. For a Bristol-based set netter, salmon fishing is more lifestyle than livelihood. From what you just described, that seems like the exact opposite of what's also going on in Alaska.
Yeah, I mean, there's also a lot of like 100-year-old technology here with like, gill nets, counting towers to monitor the salmon escapement. There are a lot of ways that things could be modernized, and I hear that a lot when I talk to the fleet and talk to the processors. But there's also an attitude that some of it is working. I mean, in the Inukshak district, which is where the fishing district where I am, they've been exploiting this salmon run since 1883, and there's been some missteps. I mean, there was fish traps here in the 1930s and 40s and things like that, where like the run was almost wiped out. And that's one of the reasons why Alaska actually became a state, a US state, is because they wanted to manage it directly and sustainably here. But now it's actually a major success story because they're having, they forecast conservatively like 20, 21 million fish just on this side of Bristol Bay. And they're probably going to exceed that. I'm hearing they might hit 25 million. I mean, I'm just pulling the stats, and these are numbers are always like, a day or two behind. But for the total Bristol Bay right now, we've got a run of over 42 million fish. And of the catch, it's nearly 30 million fish. And over, and about 11 and a half million of that is escapement. So, fish that are going up the river for, future runs. And far and away, the Inukshak district, the western side, almost 14 million fish have been caught. And this is just, we're into the second week of July. Things are slowing down, don't get me wrong. We've seen most of the run probably, but I'm talking to the fleet. I mean, a lot of them are expected to continue to fish for another week or two at least.
Yeah, that was my next question, is when does the season end? Or is it
It
just
doesn't like fall like huge, like it's more like it peters out. I mean, the fleet peaked on, I think it was June 24th, there were over 600 vessels registered, and now we're a little short of 400. So what happens is things slow down, skippers will move to other districts, pull out, some go home, some have made my catch. What ends up happening is this: as the sockeye peter out, there's a later run, then you can have cohos later, there's pink salmon come later, and some vessels and processors will stick around for that. But sockeye is really that's the major driver of this fishery.
with the season dwindling down, you said that there's been a lot of changes over the years. Are people feeling positive after this past season, like, and looking into the future?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard a lot of people say, this strong run on the Inukshak, we needed this. We needed a good year, and they're getting it. There is concern with consolidation about, ultimately the price that will be paid to the fleet and also with the wholesale market. I mean, you have too much fish on the market at once. That can cause a glut. That happened in 2022. There was just a huge run, and there was a glut, and the price dropped. And that actually, some of the major players couldn't weather that. I mean, that's arguably one of the things that really hurt OBI and Peter Pan. They didn't have the deep enough pockets to weather that. What I'm hearing so far when I talk to people who are more of the C-suite, things like that, is they feel like there is enough demand in the market to absorb the sockeye, that the price is remaining relatively stable. We won't know until the dust settles, but there is a feeling of optimism that it's a healthy production numbers, the price will remain reasonable, and everyone will come out in the black at the end of the season. One of the things that was really interesting is I got to go up in the air yesterday with an area management biologist from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and the pilot and him were really edified to see that this is considered late in the season, because the Inukshak district usually peaks around the US holiday, 4th of July, Independence Day. It was July 8th when we were in the air, and we saw some major activity all across the western parts of Bristol Bay. You can, even if you're 1,500 feet, you can see those sockeye fish hitting those gill nets and on the set net sites and the drift net on the 32-foot boats. And they were really pleased to see that the effort was continuing and that the catch was continuing to be hauled in.
Undercurrent News, reporting from the land, sea, and air. Amazing. Jacob, thank you so much. You can check out Jacob's Jacobs coverage. We've got it all in the show notes.
Yeah, land, air, and sea. Hopefully in the future we can have some submersibles or dirigibles. I really would like to report by a blimp. So have a word upstairs and see if we can get
We'll see what we can do. All right, thanks. Jacob.
Thank you, Amanda.
What will next week bring tariff-wise? Lauren will have to tell you all about it next week. Thanks for listening. Bye.